Check out my newly renamed podcast, Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown, where we'll discuss the ongoing conflict with Iran and its implications for our economy, security, and upcoming elections. Hope to see you there. Democracy on Fire on United America Network.
Welcome to Hotspots on the United America Network. From the shifting landscapes of politics and culture to the urgent challenges facing our planet and our communities, this is where the conversations that matter most come alive. With her experience as a journalist, legislator, and activist, Kay Brown brings sharp insight, uplifting perspective, and unflinching courage to the issues shaping our future. Get ready for candid conversations, bold ideas, and the pushback our times demand. Now, here's Kay.
Hello, welcome to Hotspots, where we're discussing the unfolding political debacle from our spectacular desert location in Riverside County, California. Today, we'll continue exploring the egregious effects Christian nationalism is having on people's lives. We'll be looking at Christian nationalism's homeschool pipeline and, unfortunately, the new federal private school voucher program in the big ugly bill that could make this phenomena even more threatening and widespread. My guest today, Maggie Siddiqui, is a policy advisor to the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty, which worked against this new unprecedented federal school voucher program included in the big ugly bill that passed Congress last summer. The new law includes a program to divert billions of dollars every year away from public education and into private, often religious schools. There are a lot of problems with public funding of private schools. This approach, in general, diverts money away from public education, wipes out separation of church and state, and endangers religious liberty for everyone. Before we get into the specifics of the new law with our guest, Maggie Siddiqui, I want to frame the picture of how this push to support private schools at the national level fits into the Christian nationalism movement that's ascending rapidly in our country today. For many decades, Christian nationalists who wanted to take on what they viewed as debased woke culture and return America to its true roots as a conservative Christian nation, where white, heterosexual males ruled and women were confined to traditional roles, raising and bearing children and taking care of the home, and LGBTQ plus individuals were demonized, these folks had a detailed, long-range plan to make it happen. I gained insight into this situation watching the documentary Shiny Happy People, Duggar Family Series, Episode 2, Growing Up Gothard. You can find it on Amazon Prime. It's a documentary series that delves into the controversial teachings and practices of the Institute in Basic Life Principles, otherwise known as IBLP, and that was founded by Bill Gothard and provided much of the primary curriculum in these schools. The documentary focuses on the Duggar family, who gained fame through the reality show 19 Kids and Counting, and explores the impact of Gothard's teaching on the lives of those kids. The Joshua generation is one of the most ambitious plots of modern evangelical history, but hardly anyone has ever heard of it. It's a decades-long, multi-generational plan to raise up an elite task force of Christian homeschool graduates to infiltrate the highest levels of government. A law clerk of Anthony Kennedy of the U.S. Supreme Court was one of the leaders of the Joshua Generation movement, and a lot of its leaders were influenced by Gothard. He was a template. Their kids were supposed to be this force that was going to conquer the country and the world for the kingdom of God. The whole purpose was to position the brightest and best of Christian homeschool kids so that they would eventually hold positions of power and influence in the government and the law. The goal was they would become U.S. senators, U.S. presidents, and most importantly, U.S. Supreme Court justices, in order to bring America back to its prior moral stances. So they were grooming these generation of leaders, next generation of leaders, and proponents of Gothard's beliefs through the homeschooling movement in conservative Christian school. So they were grooming this next generation of leaders and proponents of Gothard's beliefs through the homeschooling movement in conservative Christian circles. And so the kids in these families were emphasized to them obedience, purity, and submission to authority. And the documentary delves into their experiences and all the challenges and the struggles that they had, and particularly the fact that their schooling was inaccurate, inadequate, misinformation with respect to history and science and cultural roles and so on. And so this was a challenge for them when they entered the world and saw other perspectives and points of view. So that's just a general backdrop to what is happening rapidly in our federal government now. And I'm so pleased that Maggie Siddiqui, policy advisor to the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty, is with me today to discuss this new law. Thank you, Maggie, for being here. Really appreciate it. How did you get interested in this issue, and why is your group concerned about it?
Thanks so much for having me. It is an incredibly important issue for a number of reasons. The group that the Baptist Joint Committee is a part of in opposing this National School Voucher Program is called the National Coalition for Public Education, and that consists of teachers and superintendents and civil rights leaders and disability rights activists, as well as religious liberty advocates, because there are so many of us that have a real vested interest in protecting our public education. For the Baptist Joint Committee, being an organization that is working for faith freedom for all, we really oppose vouchers because they are the use of public funds for private uses. And that's harmful to our religious liberty in two ways. So first is because vouchers ultimately undermine public education, right? Public schools are the only education system where religious freedom is guaranteed to be protected for all students, no matter their faith, right? And yet vouchers are a divestment in those schools, which we all know could use more funding, not less, and giving that funding to schools that can and do discriminate on the basis of religion, race, disability, and other protected characteristics. So we reject this notion of using public funds for uses that are only available to select few. We also know historically vouchers are largely only utilized by families that are already sending their kids to private schools and are therefore already able to afford that additional expense. And they're not available to the approximately 20% of kids who attend schools in rural areas, right? And where private schools are generally not common or especially accessible. But the second reason that we oppose vouchers for religious liberty reasons is because vouchers entangle government with religion, right? Many private schools are religious. And of course, for a lot of parents, they're sending their kids to private school because they want their kids to get that religious education. But we have a long history in our country of keeping government out of our religious affairs. We don't want the government to force taxpayers to fund religions that they might strongly disagree with, or even religions that they might agree with. And we know that also government funds come with government strings. And so church-state separation is in the best interest of our faith communities as well, because religious instruction should be determined by our faith communities, not by the government. And so this, I could go on, but this National School Voucher Program is just really concerning from a religious liberty standpoint.
How does it work? I don't quite get all the moving pieces and parts of it. Could you explain a little bit about the mechanics of how these vouchers will work for individual families?
Sure. So you'll hear this program talked about in a number of ways, like school choice or tuition tax credit or educational choice for children. But the thing to note is that it is an unprecedented national school voucher program. It is giving choice to private schools, not to families. And it is an unprecedented tax policy. So the mechanism is actually quite unique. So it works as a dollar-for-dollar tax credit to anyone who gives a donation to an intermediary called a scholarship granting organization. That scholarship granting organization then provides school vouchers. No other kind of nonprofit gets a dollar for dollar tax credit for their donors. At most, when you give to a house of worship or a homeless shelter, any other kind of charity, you're getting maximum a third of that back in tax deductions at the end of the year. But here, donors are giving 100% of that money back. So there's this massive incentive we've created in our tax policy to funnel federal dollars towards school vouchers. And now our government is saying that school vouchers, which most Americans don't even want, we've seen time and time again, are worth at least three times as much as other charitable efforts serving our communities.
And so the details of this are still being worked out, or they need to adopt regulations, or it just passed recently. And of course, the federal government is in total chaos. I'm sure this isn't at the top of their list, but maybe it is. What do you see coming up in the near future toward implementation of this new unprecedented program?
Yes. So fortunately, implementation doesn't start until 2027. However, there are a lot of steps that are already underway and that seem to indicate they are prioritizing this. First, the Treasury Department needs to establish regulation, right? This is a standard process when a law is passed, right? The executive branch then creates regulations to say, what does this look like in practice? What is a scholarship granting organization? We're also fortunate that it is not a federal mandate in this particular version of the law that passed. So states will have to choose whether or not to opt in to the program. There are already efforts underway in a number of states trying to push them to opt in. I will say that in recent years, there have been, I think, referendums, statewide referendums around statewide school voucher programs about 17 times. Every single time, whether it's a red state or a blue state or a purple state, they have failed because people do not want school vouchers across the political spectrum. But there are absolutely efforts to try to change that now and say, hey, there's this federal voucher program. It's this dollar for dollar tax credit. We need to take advantage of this. And so that will be the next step after, is for states to opt in or opt out of the program. And then implementation will be in 2027. So it sounds far away, but it's coming up sooner than we think.
So how does a family that wants to homeschool their children get a voucher? You mentioned that the tax credits go to donors, but how does a family interact with the program?
There's a lot we don't know yet. I imagine they would work with a scholarship granting organization. So you're probably going to start seeing ads from a lot of these organizations trying to recruit donors as soon as that program is underway. But we really don't know what the specifics will look like yet. I think there are close to 5 million, somewhere between 4 and 5 million children that are currently in private schools. We know that vouchers typically go to kids that are already in private schools. So they're not typically helping additional students, but I imagine so a lot of that funding may just go to them.
Is there an estimate for how much this will ultimately cost federal taxpayers?
So this is actually wild. We really don't know because Congress removed the cap on the bill before passing it. So it is completely unclear what the total hit will be to the federal government for creating this program. The Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy estimates that up to 59 million taxpayers may be interested in claiming the tax credit, which would cost the federal government over $100 billion, with a B, per year. $100 billion per year. That would be the largest tax cut in the that was included in the budget reconciliation bill that passed this year. The largest one, if the up to 59 million actually do take advantage of this tax credit, which we certainly hope they will not.
Wow. Is there anything that can be done to reverse this at this point? Are we stuck with this out into the future, or is there any effort underway to undo this new law?
I mean, there's kind of chaos in Congress right now, I think, in the aftermath of this budget reconciliation bill, right? That we're in the midst now, as we're recording this, of the government shutdown, the temporary lapse in appropriations as due to the fallout around the budget reconciliation bill and what's going to happen next with congressional appropriations. So I don't know that I saw this particular provision in the bill as one of the things in under negotiation in Congress right now. I know that certainly not everybody who voted in favor of the bill was in favor of this particular provision. So I always hold out hope that members of Congress will vote in the interests of their constituents. And so that we're over a year away, who knows, maybe there something could happen there. We also don't know what the Department of Treasury regulations will say as of yet about what the specifics of this program will look like. So there are folks that I've heard that are reaching out to the Department of Treasury and asking them to make this work for families and communities to the extent that it is possible for any voucher program to do that and that doesn't harm public schools. And then reaching out to states and making sure that they do not opt in to this harmful program. And then lastly, when it does come time that scholarship granting organizations are advertising this program and trying to get folks to contribute to it, that those potential donors recognize that getting money toward private schools is actually divesting from public education. Because what happens when you lose 5 students from a public school? All of the money that's tied to the allocation of students to that school then gets taken out of a school's costs. But they still have to keep the AC or the heat running. They still have to have the lights on. They still probably have to have the same number of school buses on the road. There are all of these fixed costs, and that means less funding. And lots of schools are already seeing these kinds of cuts in other ways, right? You're losing teachers, class sizes are getting bigger, lots of other ways that public education gets harmed. And so it'll be really important that we spread the word about the harms that are unfolding.
Thank you, Maggie, for being with me today and discussing this really important emerging issue, which is how do we defend and strengthen public education, which is so crucial to a functioning democracy. And we can see now how things are unraveling, and this Christian nationalist movement has really had a negative effect in influencing policy at the federal level. Christian nationalism is a through line that connects the authoritarian takeover of our government, the unrelenting assaults on free speech, the rule of law, our health, our personal freedoms, and our public education system. So I really thank you for being here, Maggie. I so appreciate that your organization stood with dozens of national faith partners in opposing the Big Ugly Bill, not just because it attacks religious freedom, but because it slashes funding for health care and food support, and all to bankroll tax cuts for the billionaires are unnecessary and destructive to our society. So we'll leave it there for today, and I hope you'll join us for Hot Spots with Kay Brown again I hope you'll join us for Hot Spots with Kay Brown again next week on United America Network. Getting out of this mess takes a movement. We're working to build a movement through awareness that leads to action. And we hope you'll join that movement with us on United America Network. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
You've been listening to Hot Spots with Kay Brown, where tough issues meet thoughtful conversation. Stay engaged, stay inspired, and join us again as we spotlight the struggles, solutions, and stories that fuel resilience and change. Until next time, keep your fire burning. Hot Spots is a production of the United America Network and is available on most major podcast platforms, as well as from unitedamericanetwork.com. This is what democracy sounds and looks like.
If you've had enough and want to wake up our recalcitrant Congress, join me on Democracy on Fire with Kay Brown for the top 23 reasons we need regime change now. Hope to see you there, Democracy on Fire, on United America Network.